Hello and welcome to this news roundup from swissinfo.ch. I'm Julia Slater.
One man came from South America. He flew to Barcelona and took a train. Another one took a taxi from Paris to Basel. Another one flew to Marrakesh, I think, and then on to Rome and got here. The fallout's been really rather small, quite a lot smaller than one would have expected.
One story dominated the news this week. The disruption to the lives of thousands upon thousands of Europeans and others. As the Eyjafjallajökull volcano in Iceland spewed out its ash, travellers were stranded all over the world. Some fumed, others were more creative. We'll be hearing more later. Creativity has been on show in Geneva too. Two mobile phone providers got some news which shocked them, and Switzerland is looking forward to the tourist season. Switzerland's airspace was closed from midnight on Friday until Tuesday morning because the drifting volcanic ash presented serious dangers to aircraft. Of course, Switzerland wasn't the only country affected. Others had already been forced to ban flights a couple of days earlier. The whole thing was a recipe for chaos. Even when the air was declared safe again, airlines warned that the knock-on effects would continue for some time. As for sorting out how much it's all cost and who is going to pay for what, that's an ongoing story. And should the airspace have been closed at all? Not everyone is convinced. That's another one that's going to go on and on. Mobile phone operators must have made a killing with all those passengers trying to find out what was happening and contact their friends and families. But two of Switzerland's major providers got news this week that won't have made them so happy. The Competition Commission gave the thumbs down to the planned merger between Orange and Sunrise. The reason? The Swiss mobile phone market would then have been dominated by only two companies, the merged one and Swisscom. The parent companies of Orange and Sunrise said they were disappointed and surprised. The Consumer Federation in Western Switzerland called it a sensational victory for consumers. Professor Stefan Garelli, an authority on competitiveness at the IMD Business School in Lausanne, told Swiss Info what he thought about it.
As long as I have good service and that the practices respect free competition, the fact that I have two, three or four players at the top doesn't bother me. If there would be an abuse of dominant position, then I think it's up to the authorities to intervene.
Volcanic ash or not, international gatherings continue. We heard at the beginning about visitors who determinedly made their way to a conference giving tips to wealthy individuals thinking about moving to Switzerland. Another international event that opened in Geneva this week was the Inventors Fair. You'd expect the ingenious participants to find ways to get there, and so they did, on the whole. 70% of exhibitors were there on the first day. The founder and president of the fair, Jean-Luc Vincent, told Swiss Info that inventors rise to challenges.
Each time there's a crisis, an epidemic or a war, inventors have to come up with ideas to solve the problems. At our last news conference, we announced that we had a record number of inventions this year, with 785 exhibitors from 45 countries.
Et ça, c'est le record des 38 salons précédents.
Who knows if unpleasant flying or non-flying experiences will make people think twice about travelling far for their holidays this summer. But two different tourism providers have been talking about their wares this week. Bed and breakfast is a concept which has taken off in Switzerland in recent years. And thanks to the economic crisis, the number of B&B nights was up by a huge 10% in 2009. Dorette Provost of the Association Bed and Breakfast Switzerland told Swiss Info about her members and why so many Swiss are interested in opening their doors to strangers.
Now we are near 900 and I think there's no end. It's open wherever you are, you can open a bed and breakfast. It's not necessarily that you stay in a chalet or in a house or in wherever. You can open your bed and breakfast. And so I think it will still grow because more people are coming to Switzerland, more people are looking for that kind of accommodation, and more people want to open their bed and breakfast because they like it.
Meanwhile, the Swiss Tourism Organisation is pushing hiking as a cheap, fun activity that brings people close to the beauties of Switzerland, as its deputy director, Urs Eberhardt, told Swiss Info.
There is so many things in Switzerland that you get for free. That doesn't cost anything. A sunset on a mountain, being on your back in the flowers and looking at clouds, drinking the water from the fountains, which is crystal clear drinking water wherever you are, jumping into a lake and you can swim with your mouth open because also the lakes have drinking water quality. I think all this adds to this. It's a relatively inexpensive experience.
There was disappointing news for an unwilling guest in Switzerland this week. Film director Roman Polanski, who's under house arrest at his chalet in Gstaad, has lost an appeal against extradition to the United States, where he's wanted on charges of unlawful sex with a minor more than 30 years ago. An appeals court in California ruled that Polanski cannot be sentenced in absentia. And now let's go back to the volcano story and our former Swiss Info colleague Justin Henner, who had his own experience of it on Monday.
Justin was on his way to Canada to start a new life when he too got stranded at Zurich Airport. Ever the journalist, he spoke to some fellow strandees. Some were fed up and not at all impressed with their airline. Torin and Abe were two Nigerians trying to get back to New York.
No help, no information, nothing.
All they offer was like, well, it's not our fault. I said, well, it's not our fault too. But even if you're not doing anything for the passenger, at least make us feel like we are somebody, you know, instead of treating us like a trash, kind of.
Margaret was trying to get back to Canada. Justin asked her how she rated her airline.
Probably I would rate that -9.
Of course, it's no joke to be stranded. People have lives to live. Abby again.
I don't know exactly what to do. But believe me, my job is at stake too.
It's doubly difficult for Margaret.
For me, I have to be back today. I have my own business, so it's even worse. Because I don't get paid for this delay. I have a disabled child and I have to have somebody to look after her. And it's not easy.
With so many people waiting, there wasn't enough accommodation to go around. Rashid Abbas, who'd been in Switzerland on business, was on his way to Abu Dhabi.
I sleep in airport, but that's very difficult. Zurich, that's very expensive.
Nowhere to sleep, nothing to eat. Easier for him to sum up his impression in French.
C'est catastrophique.
He was not alone in experiencing this. Justin spoke to the leader of a group of 10 Filipinos on their way to take up jobs on a cruise ship in Amsterdam. They had flown from Manila via Bangkok and had been stuck in Zurich for 4 days. They'd been given one night in a hotel and since then had been making the best of things at the airport. It was clear they were going to miss their boat, but their agent had found an alternative for them.
The agent told us that we can take a train in order to reach our destination in Germany instead of Amsterdam.
Some people were very philosophical, like this man, a pious Muslim, who had been spending a holiday in Italy and was on his way back to Manchester.
You know, it is like a learning experience for us. It is a sign for the intelligent one, and it is a warning for the disobedient ones.
And he was leaving with positive impressions of the Swiss and Switzerland.
Their conducts are good, their manners are good, the country is clean. I would definitely say that.
And Margaret too, despite her worries about what was happening back home, was determined to be positive about her holiday.
That I am going to remember the nice part.
As for Justin, after a lot of queuing, he managed to get a flight the day after he recorded the interviews.
Thanks, Scott. And now it's time for our Out and About feature, which this time comes from the other side of the world. Life goes on in Haiti, 3 months after the earthquake. Thomas Kern of Swiss Info's photo department knows the country well. He first went in 1997 and has been back more times than he can remember. But the visit he's just made was rather different. I asked him how he felt as he prepared to go.
Well, I have to admit that I was quite apprehensive to go there in the first place. It was strange because, when you know a place that well, that I know Haiti now, there's a lot of things I knew that wouldn't change. However, it was more like, say, the psychological state of the people that I was afraid of. I could imagine what the buildings looked like. So the visuals were not what I was concerned about. It was more like, how do people cope with that?
But the pictures that you show, though, show absolutely incredible destruction, which is kind of quite difficult for us to imagine.
Yeah, I mean, even for me, I sat in a car when I got there and drove to a friend's house. And it was strange because there were like whole streets that just looked pretty normal. And then, you know, you make a left turn and then suddenly there is a football ground which is filled with like 700 tents. And people live there and then do another left turn. And then you are in the middle of a neighborhood that is completely destroyed.
And what did you find about the psychological state of the people?
Well, you know, not to resort to cliches, but of course, you know, I assume that the Haitians are actually pretty well equipped for something like that. They are, you know, they have just to deal with it. They're used to deal with difficult situations even before the earthquake. And I think they probably did that quite well. So it's more the long-term effects that it has on people, which are probably only coming now. I think it's more the general feeling of helplessness in the sense of like there's no vision, there is no state, there is no institutions we would be used to rely on. You know, they don't have that. So and I think that's something that could be in the long term could become difficult. You know, they never had that before, but I think now it would be really necessary to have something like that.
Did people talk to you about the actual experience of the earthquake itself?
Yeah, of course, you know, like everybody has a story to tell. And I think that's one of the main stories. How did it happen?
Actually, I didn't know it was an earthquake, but I had my two kids with me. And I said, oh my God!
I saw how the earth began to, it was as if, it was like the waves on the sea. And then everything just collapsed. There was no more electricity, no more way of communicating. Everything was down.
What about, I mean, you're saying that people don't have any reliance on the state to do things for them, but what about people personally? Are they looking ahead? Are they making plans?
Well, you know, most Haitians usually don't make plans. They live from day to day, which is, I think, a huge advantage in a situation like that. I think a lot of people who lost things, they will probably leave as soon as they can.
So you're not really that hopeful for the future?
To be honest, I think no. And I think it's very difficult. I mean, there's a huge amount of money now, which has been donated and pledged by countries and all that. And the question, the real question will be, what is going to happen with this money? Well, there's a lot of potential there, but whether it's going to be used right, that's has nothing to do with the earthquake, but that's politics. And I think that's a difficult thing. Yeah, that's I'm not very optimistic there, yeah.
That was Thomas Cairn, just back from Haiti. Watch out for his pictures on the www.swissinfo.ch site. He's prepared two audio slideshows, which will be appearing shortly. And of course, there's plenty more news from Switzerland on the site as well. Thanks for listening, and listen again next week. I'm Julia Slater. We'll go out on a piece from the EOS Guitar Quartet, who play classical and contemporary jazz. This piece is called Karate.